Ghislaine Maxwell were Israeli spies. That's what a lot of people online are certainly saying. So, you know, this kind of move is welcome, if you like. But I'm afraid for a lot of people, the fact that Jeffrey Epstein will never take the stand will probably, some might say, mean that many other people potentially implicated in this massive, massive crime will never face full accountability for their actions. Of course, Prince Andrew was famously pictured with Virginia Giuffre, who was allegedly trafficked with Ghislaine Maxwell, literally in the picture. And of course, the famous interview took place with Prince Andrew, where he denied virtually all of the questions that were put to him.
Despite some of that photographic evidence, we have time for just one tweet, Richard.
So let's go to Anthony online, who says, Ghislaine Maxwell, officially charged with sex trafficking of minors. Will Trump send her another message wishing her well in court? And will Prince Andrew's inability to sweat finally be cured? Hashtag Trump.
Wow, it may well be that miracle. Richard Sedan, thank you. And thank you so much for being with us for this edition of The Bulletin. Please stay there. Until next time.
This is IRIB English Radio.
IRIB English Radio. With you every single moment.
In the limelight.
Vladimir Putin, Angela Merkel and Emmanuel Macron discussed Russia's Sputnik V vaccine and its use in Europe on a conference call on Tuesday, 30th of March, according to the Kremlin. Moscow's statement said that, among other subjects, the Russian, German and French leaders discussed prospects for the registration of the vaccine in the European Union and the possibility of shipments and joint production of Sputnik V in EU nations. It did not say who raised the topic. The article you're about to hear has been written by The Guardian's Europe correspondent John Henley. The piece is titled Merkel, Macron and Putin in Talks About Using Sputnik V Jab in Europe. Stay with us for more of the article by John Henley. Vladimir Putin, Angela Merkel and Emmanuel Macron discussed Russia's Sputnik V vaccine and its use in Europe on a conference call on Tuesday, 30th of March, according to the Kremlin. Moscow's statement said that, among other subjects, the Russian, German and French leaders discussed prospects for the registration of the Sputnik vaccine in the European Union and the possibility of shipments and joint production in European Union nations. The statement did not say who raised the topic. The European Union's sluggish vaccine rollout has been dogged by an early shortage of doses, but those shortfalls were expected to ease significantly from the beginning of next month, with more than 300 million doses of Pfizer, BioNTech, Moderna and Johnson & Johnson and AstraZeneca vaccines set to arrive in April, May and June. The German government confirmed last week it would be open to using the Sputnik vaccine if and when it is approved by the European Medicines Agency, EMA, with Angela Merkel's spokesman, Stefan Siebert, saying an eventual green light from the European Medicines Agency, EMA, would make the shot worth considering for Germany. Referring to the Russian vaccine, the Chancellor herself said Germany should use any vaccine that has been approved by the European Medicines Agency, EMA, while the German Health Ministry said last week all vaccines are welcome if they have been approved by the EMA. France has been considerably more circumspect, however, with French Foreign Minister Jean-Yves Le Drian last week accusing both Russia and China of using their vaccines to gain influence and score points abroad. Jean-Yves Le Drian told France Info Radio, "In terms of how it is managed, the Sputnik vaccine is more of a means of propaganda and aggressive diplomacy than a means of solidarity and health aid." Thierry Breton, the French European Union Commissioner, who heads the EU Executive's Vaccine Task Force, has also said the European bloc has absolutely no need for Sputnik V vaccine, since it clearly has the capacity to deliver 300 to 350 million doses by the end of June. The Sputnik vaccine manufacturer responded aggressively, saying in a series of Twitter posts that Thierry Breton was clearly biased and demanding, "If this is an official position of the European Union, please inform us that there is no reason to pursue EMA approval because of your political biases." European regulator EMA launched a rolling review of Sputnik V vaccine earlier this month, a step towards it being approved as the first non-Western coronavirus jab to be used across the bloc. European Union experts are due to visit Russia in April to check the results of clinical trials and inspect the production process. Russia registered the shot in August before large-scale clinical trials, prompting initial fears about the safety of Sputnik V. But reviews since then have been largely positive, with The Lancet publishing results showing the vaccine is safe and more than 90% effective. Russian manufacturers have not so far managed to increase domestic production to meet demand at home and abroad. But the Russian government has said the country aims to produce 178 million individual doses of Sputnik V vaccine and two other vaccines, the EpiVac Corona and the Covivac, by the end of June. It has also said it hopes to fully vaccinate 30 million Russians by the same date, leaving a possible 118 million domestically produced vaccine shots available for export. It also has reportedly set up production deals with 10 other countries to produce its vaccines outside of Russia. Russian pharmaceuticals company R-Pharm said last week it expected to begin joint production of Sputnik V vaccine in its plant in Bavaria in southern Germany, with doses starting to become available from June. France and Spain have also been named as potential production sites for Sputnik V production within the European Union. The three leaders, Vladimir Putin, Angela Merkel, and Emmanuel Macron, also discussed the conflicts in eastern Ukraine, Libya, and Syria, according to the Kremlin statement. The statement said Putin also responded to questions about the jailed Russian opposition leader Alexei Navalny during a frank and businesslike discussion. Meanwhile, Russia's Sputnik V vaccine appears to be gaining acceptance in European Union, as the head of Germany's regulatory authority publicly praised the COVID-19 jab and Italy could become the first European country to produce the Sputnik V vaccine from the summer. Thomas Mertens, the head of Germany's Standing Commission on Vaccination, described Sputnik V in an interview as a good vaccine that will presumably also be approved in the European Union at some point. Russian scientists are very experienced in vaccines, Thomas Mertens told Rheinische Post. Sputnik V is a very clever construct, he said. Russia drew criticism last summer when it approved Sputnik V for widespread use after less than 2 months of human testing, amid fears that Kremlin was hoping to leverage the vaccine as a soft power tool. But large-scale clinical trials, results published in The Lancet in February of this year, deemed the vaccine to be safe and offers about 92% protection against COVID-19. The Russian Sputnik V jab is being assessed by the European Medicines Agency, EMA, but has already been ordered to put to use in some European Union countries, particularly in Eastern Europe. From July, the Russian vaccine could also be produced inside the European Union after a deal was struck between Adyen, an Italian-Swiss pharmaceutical company, and the Russian Direct Investment Fund. Depending on approval from Italian regulators, production could begin at the company's factory in Caponago near Milan in July, with 10 million Sputnik doses expected to be produced for export to non-EU countries by the end of the year. Vincenzo Trani, the president of the Italian-Russian Chamber of Commerce, which helped bring the deal together, hailed the move as historic and said it would help create jobs in Italy. Trani added that agreement reflected the healthy state of relations between our two countries and underscores how Italian companies can see beyond political differences. The Italian government was reportedly not made aware of the deal, although the Ministry of Economic Development said it was a legitimate operation. Attilio Fontana, the president of the Lombardy region in Italy, said the agreement was good news. Sputnik will not be made available for use in Italy unless it is given approval by both the European Medicines Agency, EMA, and the Italian Pharmaceutical Authority, AIFA. Leading politicians, as well as several medical experts, have called for Sputnik to be approved for use in Italy, where the vaccination program has been hampered by late deliveries of other vaccines. Roberto Speranza, the Italian health minister, said if Sputnik got approval, then it would be used in Italy. If a vaccine works and if EMA and AIFA say that it is safe and effective, then nationality doesn't interest me, he added. The European Medicines Agency, EMA, which has so far authorized the use of BioNTech, Pfizer, Moderna and AstraZeneca vaccines, began assessing the Russian Sputnik V vaccine on 4th of March this year.
Inside Israel. There is an increase in social welfare cases across Israel. This is because there is dangerous levels of conditions and violence at home and in society. More people in Israel are seeking help than ever before. This includes hundreds of thousands of families. Many of them have sought help for the first time.
Exceedingly much worse than last year. Our services are exponentially rising. The stats are in front of me. Our amount of food baskets that we give is from 3,500 a week to 4,500 a week. It's more than a 30% increase. There are hundreds of thousands of new poor that are seeking our services.
This This is according to Organization of Directors of Social Affairs Offices in Local Authorities. This organization represents 150 welfare organizations across Israel. The report says that children are the most at risk. There has been an increase in social welfare cases. This is due to the significant number of families seeking help due to dangerous conditions and cases of violence at home. The coronavirus pandemic, along with a political deadlock and no budget, have brought hundreds of thousands of new families to social service departments. This is due to the economic and social distress they are facing. Hundreds of thousands of families have sought state help for the first time. Data also shows a 20% increase in children at risk. There's also a 26% spike in domestic violence. The numbers are from a group of directors of social affairs offices. They are known as the Organization of Directors of Social Affairs Offices in Local Authorities. The organization represents 150 welfare organizations across Israel. In a report it published in January, the organization claims that there is also a 21.5% rise in the number of calls relating to youth or young adults in distress. There is an affiliated rise in the number of young people threatening or attempting to commit suicide. The data relate to hundreds of thousands of citizens who have appealed for help and reflect not only a dramatic increase in the number of new applications, but also in the scope of issues involved. On social media, the conversation took a different turn. On Twitter, Gilad says, in Israel, the leading NGO that supports youth at risk published their numbers, and they are horrendous. Increase of 5 times numbers in youth cases, 4.8 times anxiety and depression, 2 times eating disorders, 5 times domestic violence, 2 times self-abuse, and today we launch another lockdown. Andre says he bets that nobody would be held accountable. Women's Voices says, the number of complaints of domestic violence in Israel increased by 300% since March, attributed in part to the 2 coronavirus pandemic-induced closures and the subsequent economic crisis.
I'm self-employed, and I haven't really worked in a year. So all of a sudden, I'm also in a different kind of economic situation. The smart people do what they can, but I don't think there really is anybody that's... We were hit with a pandemic we didn't see coming. Nobody knew how to deal with it. And that includes the government. You know, we look to them, but they're just as clueless. Even today, after a year later, nobody's really sure what's really going on.
There's been a rise of about 68% of calls reporting domestic violence from Israeli homes to the resource centers and emergency centers. The problem is that we've actually seen a very big decline in elderly people calling, and there's a very high chance, according to various experts, that elderly people are being abused, but they are unable to call. And additionally, we've seen a rise of reports from women and children who are undergoing abuse. The problem is that many children cannot be seen in the schools by the teachers, so the only contact they have with them is through Skype or through Zoom, and that is why they are unable to really know about their condition and situation. There's no doubt that there's been a very high rise of violence against children in various homes, and larger numbers of children are suffering. The problem is that if a child goes to school, it's possible to possibly identify if he exhibits certain behavior that shows that he's been beaten at home or may have scars or the way he speaks or isolates himself. In the Zoom era, it's much harder. So while some teachers are somehow able to sense that something is wrong with some students, there's probably a much larger percentage of number of students who are being underreported or invisible for the violence that they're being on the receiving end of. And due to unemployment and high pressure and lack of adequate services, there's growing incidents of violence in many homes, and it's all the various after effects that are also taking place, including homelessness and extreme violence. The Israeli government didn't really address the issue of violence in homes, although there's been a very large increase. So many of the organizations who are dealing with this have been overwhelmed. So there really hasn't been a new budget in the country. There's a lack of funding for organizations and for asylums and for schools. So due to all these reasons, there's been a massive underfunding, and this issue has been to a large degree unrecognized and underplayed by the Israeli government.
Since last year, there has been a significant increase in the number of children who urgently need shelter. Among the reasons for this are reports of suspected assault on minors, physically and sexually, and in towns that are considered economically strong. The number of young men and women hanging out in the streets without an educational framework has increased. The directors of social affairs offices demanded the regime establish emergency shelters for children of youth and men who live on the streets and do not have any family support, in the wake of the large number of young men who have been dismissed from their work and forced to leave their apartments. The situation is prevalent in all circles of Israeli society. In fact, in late 2020, the Women's International Zionist Organization, WIZO, a volunteer organization dedicated to social welfare that monitored the amount of calls to domestic violence hotlines, admitted that domestic violence in Israel has increased by 300%. Since the start of 2020, some 20 women were murdered by their spouse, with 18 of the murders having occurred after the coronavirus pandemic first broke out in Israel in March last year. The report also noted a 350% increase in the number of women asking for help in centers for the prevention and treatment of domestic violence. Of course, women are only another victim. According to the Organization of Directors of Social Affairs Offices in Local Authorities, the coronavirus pandemic has brought hundreds of thousands of new families to social service departments due to the economic distress they are facing. On social media, the conversation took a different turn. Kathy on Twitter says, "We do need to be prepared for a revolution. Who is going to lead and how do we gather and plan?" Rachel asks, "How can we trust the regime to protect women when there is no consensus within our own justice system that domestic violence should be taken seriously? How can we expect women to believe that they are entitled to leave violent relationships when our courts tell them otherwise?" Woman for Just says, "So why did the right block an investigation of domestic violence and murder a woman in Israel?"
Because people in the end do what they want to do. And even now we're in a quarantine, but people are walking around. I can go wherever I want. So maybe in a sense, had they enforced it more, but you know, there's only so much. People have to take a personal responsibility also, is what I'm
saying.
That I have something to say about, because when I watch the news and I hear people talking about the government and vote for this one and elections, people are dying in the streets. I mean, not in the streets, but people are dying. We have much more important things to do than worrying about some Knesset member's seat. Yeah, I don't care about that. I mean, I'll vote, but I'm not going to invest my energy right now in this. We have more important things to do.
The Israeli government did not open up new centers for abused women. And although there's been a growing number of unemployed and homeless people in the streets, the Israeli government didn't create new centers or host people in new locations. All around the world, in multiple areas, in San Francisco, in Scotland, in London, the local governments and the national governments have been making very big and largely successful efforts in housing homeless people in different locations. The Israeli regime did not do this. It did not create new centers for people. It did not find new locations for people. And also, to a large degree, many Israelis did not want to host homeless people in many areas, whether hotels or Airbnb or other areas. So this did not happen. Right now, there are circumstances in which many fathers and husbands cannot provide for their family. And this, in a growing number of cases, is resulting in violence within the house. Additionally, many children and elderly living within the nuclear family and wives and mothers are encountering violence from their spouses or husbands. And the number of resources available and funding for solutions for this growing domestic violence is entirely inadequate. Additionally, due to the fact that Israel is currently undergoing its third lockdown, there's been the schools have been closed, as have most employment areas, and that is why there's been lack of proper education and a healthy environment for many students. In the last 10 to 15 years and longer, we've seen a gradual decline of various social services provided by the state to the citizens. And there's been a cutting of funds, so every year the budget has been getting smaller, and then in the last 2 years there was no budget altogether. But what is unique about this current COVID-19 situation is that the Israeli government is not creating new areas or hiring spaces where people could live and taking them off the streets. So the only thing they did is make some centers that were available already during the night. They made them also available during the day. But the number of homeless people is increasing, and there are many children in the streets, and the government is not doing anything about it, and people are growing up without any kind of guidance, which is a very dangerous and explosive situation. To begin with, Israel did not really allocate any new funds to the growing social problems that are taking place. Its only answer historically has been to provide more policing. But right now we have a situation with so many homeless people and so much violence within families, and such a poor response from the country, you need to wonder, what are they thinking and why aren't they taking care of their own citizens? So what Israel could have done differently was to find solutions for homeless people, find new areas where they could be housed, because the state owns a lot of territory, so they could have been housed there, and have more of a workforce that could visit families and check on children and elderly and see how they're doing on a one-to-one level of visiting.
So far, there is no plan by the regime to address the issues mentioned, but it is likely that even when the pandemic is over, there will be great pressure on social services due to post-traumatic effects. But what is really worrying is that these figures and numbers are huge for such a small entity such as Israel, and Israeli media is questioning whether or not Israel was ever prepared, and how the effects of the political deadlock have truly impacted Israelis, as politicians flex their political muscle while Israelis are forced to live out on the streets. Here are the news making the press in Israel. Haaretz: suicidal tendencies among school pupils up 42% this school year. Educational advisors reported having received tens of thousands of new requests for treatment by students seeking support for loneliness, distress, anxiety, and sexual abuse, according to a new report by Israel's National Council for the Child. YNET News: Israel's settler population in the occupied West Bank has grown at a far higher rate than the rest of Israel as a whole over the last 4 years, a pro-settler group said, a period that coincides with unprecedented acceptance of settlement activity from former U.S. President Donald Trump's administration. The report by West Bank Jewish Population Stats shows the settler population growing by around 13% since the start of 2017 to reach 475,481. During the same period, Israel's population grew by around 8% to reach nearly 9.3 million, according to the regime. Globes: Israel's Attorney General Avichai Mandelblit has decided to indict, subject to a hearing, former senior executives at Shikun & Binoy Holdings Limited, as well as the company itself, on suspicion of bribing public officials in Africa in order to win infrastructure tenders in Kenya and other countries, sources inform Globes. The Times of Israel: a bill stepping up enforcement of the coronavirus lockdown by doubling fines for violators passes final votes in the Knesset and will become law. The measure was the focus of fierce infighting among the parties in the coalition and had threatened to hold up a vote on extending the nationwide coronavirus lockdown.
From me and the production team here at Inside Israel, it's goodbye for now.
This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Nowruz Special. In the name of God, salam and welcome to the program. Spring can be the start of a good phase in life. This is indeed what we ask God in the moment of turning of the year. We pray to God to change our state to the best state, asking for development, and the best state is the sign of growth. The one who doesn't seek improvement and doesn't make any effort for it is like swamp. Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny, says, "Be either a scholar or in the state of learning, and do not spend your time in idleness and revelry." For sure, asking, praying for development is good, but it is not enough. Praying is very important as it connects us with the source of power, but human being needs movement to attain his goals. The life of every person is the mirror of his outlook, inclinations, and decisions. Human being plays an effective role in shaping his life. Positive outlook will bring about positive changes, and determination of a goal will reduce waste of time. In view of this, Islam has put high emphasis on self-building and inward development. Islam teaches us to have an inward trip and evaluate our deeds and even intentions every day. Self-reckoning makes us familiar with our flaws in character. For instance, self-reckoning may show us that we are jealous of others' successes. This way we can find the root cause of jealousy and cure it. This will help us move toward change. Basically, discovery of defects and shortcomings can prepare the ground for removal of them. This measure is like the spring which beautifies and refreshes everything. Another way for better living is to create moderation in life. Shunning extravagant entertainments will put life in a correct route. Human being like spring should pass through hardships and pains to attain good results. Unfortunately, modern devices and media have made mankind busy to the extent that he has lost himself. This is most evident in the social media and cyberspace. Internet and social networks such as Telegram, Instagram, Facebook, etc. have created visual attractions for most users. These attractions can be called visual magic as they fascinate their users in an uncontrollable manner. Excessive usage of internet and social media has gravely affected family life and social relations. Family members are indulged in the social media in a way that they neglect each other, though they live apparently together. Sociologists maintain that cyberspace has highly reduced audio, visual, and verbal contact between family members and aggravated stresses and anxieties. Therefore, modern man is in dire need of time management for better living. Time management has to be carried out as a family rule. In other words, parents and children should consider it as a duty to limit their browsing in the cyberspace and spend their specified time with family members. Of course, time management for the best usage of cyberspace requires government's attention to guide adolescents and children in the right direction. Imam Ali, peace upon him, says, "A faithful divides his day and night in three parts. He spends one part for supplication to God, spends the second part for making a living and the third part for halal pleasure. So it doesn't behoove a wise man to move except in three things: attaining livelihood, moving in the way of hereafter, and pleasure that is not forbidden. Imam Ali, peace upon him, in this wise saying, has in fact outlined a program for a better life. In view of this, one part of the routine life is spent in communion with God, one part for making money, and the last part for religiously permitted pleasures and entertainment. This way, the individual will not make effort to stand on his own feet. This division is quite wise and logical. One of the ways of better living is acquisition of knowledge and discovering hidden talents. Acquisition of knowledge and striving in this way is considered as worship if it is done for the sake of God, with the aim of solving people's problems and rendering service to them. The great wise man Luqman said to his son, "Dear son, in your days and nights and hours, specify a time for acquisition of knowledge, because no misery in life is similar to the misery of abandoning knowledge." Dear listeners, basically, human beings' perfection passes through the course of knowledge, ethics, and labor. In this important course, it is very important to find and bring up talents so that they cause flourishing of society in various fields. Just like the nature demonstrates freshness by flowers, plants, gushing of fountains, and singing of birds, thriving of talents will refresh a society and will prevent it from frustration, wearing away, and backwardness. But the absolute and ultimate flourishing, growth, and perfection of human community will take place with the coming of the awaited Redeemer of mankind, Imam Mahdi. May God hasten his reappearance.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
This is a part of a speech delivered on March 21st, 2021 by Ayatollah Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, on the occasion of Nowruz. The last century began with an English coup d'etat, while this century begins with elections and government on the basis of the people's votes.
In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful. All praise is due to Allah, the Lord of the worlds, and peace and greetings be upon our Master Muhammad and upon his pure household, and may God curse all their enemies. Once again, I wish to congratulate all the dear people of Iran, and I ask Allah the Exalted to bestow a blessed and auspicious year on all of them. We have entered into the year 1400. According to the common viewpoint, this year is the year of entrance into a new century. Although it may not be correct technically speaking, people say that we have entered into a new century. If we want to make a small but significant comparison with the country's entrance into the previous century, the year 1300, the latter was the beginning of the Reza Khan's dictatorial and dependent regime.
Your light and love, all I see, nothing more I'd ever want or need. My Lord, protect me from dishonor, grant me faith to be stronger.
It was in fact an English coup launched by Reza Khan, and that regime was in fact a dependent, tyrannical and English regime. That was how the country entered into 1300. This year, the year 1400, is the year of elections, which means government on the basis of independence, the people's vote and national self-confidence. So our entrance into this century has such an important difference with the entrance into the year 1300, the 14th century. I hope that God will drive all our affairs forward with the same proportion. I have prepared certain issues to discuss. The first is about this year's slogan, which stresses production once more but with a focus on the support that should be provided for it and the obstacles that should be eliminated. Later, I will discuss the issue of the upcoming elections. And I will raise a few points about it. And finally, I will raise a few short points about foreign events, the issues of the day, and also the Barjam, JCPOA, with the dear Iranian nation.
Alhamdulillah, alhamdulillah, all praises to Allah, all praises to Allah.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
in the limelight.
One year after the COVID-19 pandemic began, U.S. billionaires have made out like gangbusters at the expense of workers, says Chuck Collins, author, in an article published under the heading 10 Biggest Pandemic Profiteers. Stay tuned for the details, please. A year ago, the Institute for Policy Studies published Billionaire Bonanza 2020, Wealth, Windfalls, Tumbling Taxes, and Pandemic Profiteers, and began tracking billionaire wealth gains as unemployment surged across the U.S. A recent report summarizes the extraordinary growth in wealth of those now 657 billionaires based on real-time data from Forbes on March 18, 2021. Here are highlights from the last 12 months of billionaire wealth growth. The combined wealth of the U.S. 657 billionaires increased more than $1.3 trillion, or 44.6%, since the pandemic lockdowns began. Over those same 12 months, more than 29 million Americans contracted the virus, and more than 535,000 died from it. As billionaire wealth soared over, almost 80 million lost work between March 21, 2020 and February 20, 2021, and 80 million were collecting unemployment on February 27, 2021. There are 43 newly minted billionaires since the beginning of the pandemic, when there were 614. A number of new billionaires joined the list after initial public offerings of the stock in companies such as Airbnb, DoorDash, and Snowflake. The increase in the combined wealth of the 15 billionaires with the greatest growth in the absolute wealth was $563 billion, or 82%. The wealth growth of just these 15 represents over 40% of the wealth growth among all billionaires. Topping the list are Elon Musk, that is $137.5 billion richer, that is about 559%. Jeff Bezos, $65 billion, that is about 58%. And Mark Zuckerberg, $47 billion, that is about 86%. The 10 biggest pandemic profiteers saw the greatest percentage increase in their wealth, at least 300%. They mostly multiplied their fortunes in the world of online goods, services, and entertainment, as forcibly homebound Americans shopped, invested, and diverted themselves in isolation. They include the owners of e-commerce leaders Kitchen Loans, Square, Carvana, and cryptocurrency exchange Coinbase, social media sites, Snapchat and Twitter, online streaming platform Roku, and digital ad agency Trade Desk. 19 other billionaires experienced increases of over 200%, while 48 others more than doubled their fortunes with more than 100% gains. Bum Kim, 670%, that is about $7.7 billion, a U.S. citizen and founder of the e-commerce giant Coupang, the Amazon of South Korea. Kim's fortune surged as high as $11 billion after the company's IPO in early March. And Dan Gilbert, 642%, that is about $41.7 billion, owner of Quicken Loans, which capitalized on cloistered citizens tapping online financing, lives in Michigan. Ernest Garcia II, 567%, that is about $13.6 billion. Biggest shareholder of Carvana, the online car sales and auto financing giant, Arizona. Then there is the Elon Musk, 559%, that is about $137.5 billion. Musk is now the second wealthiest Americans at nearly $138 billion, as his shares in Tesla, SpaceX, and other companies that he owns continue to climb. He lives in Texas. And there is the Brian Armstrong, 550%, $5.5 billion, chief executive of Coinbase, the largest cryptocurrency exchange in the country. He lives in California. And then there is the Bobby Murphy, that is about 531%. That is $10.1 billion. He is the co-founder of Snapchat with his Stanford fraternity brother, Ivan Spiegel. He lives in California. And Ivan Spiegel, 490%, that is about $4.3 billion. He is the co-founder of Snapchat with his other billionaire super gainer, Bobby Murphy, California resident. And Jack Dorsey, 396%. That is about $10.3 billion, co-founder and CEOs of both Twitter and Square. The small business payment app lives in California. And Tony Wood, 331%, that is about $5.3 billion, founder of Roku, which enables online TV video streaming, California resident. And the 10th, Jeff Green, 300%, that is about $3 billion, Californian founder and chairman of The Trade Desk, a digital advertising firm. Of the industry categories, billionaires in the technology industry had the greatest collective wealth growth, $564 billion or nearly 68%. They were worth $1.4 trillion on March 18, 2021, or one-third of the billionaire's total. The titans of Wall Street, the finance and investment industry, saw their wealth grow by $226 billion, a nearly 37% increase. Automotive industry billionaires had the biggest percentage point increase in wealth, 317%, based on an increase in wealth of $172 billion. That was largely driven by the extraordinary rise in Elon Musk's wealth, that is about $137.5 billion or 559%. All but three states saw the wealth of their billionaire residents increase. Topping the list in total wealth growth are California at $551 billion, Washington at $134.6 billion, and New York at $11.4 billion. The top three states with the greatest percentage increase in wealth are Michigan at 164%, Arizona at 110%, and Hawaii at 107%. Billionaire wealth growth is calculated between March 18, 2020 and March 18, 2021, based on Forbes data compiled in this report by ATF and IPS. March 18 is used as the unofficial beginning of the crisis because they then most federal and state economic restrictions responding to the virus were in place. March 18 was also the date that Forbes picked to measure billionaire wealth for the 2020 edition of its annual Billionaires Report, which provided a baseline that ATF and IPS compare periodically with real-time data from the four